Hey everyone, welcome back to With Where and Who. I am here with Swim Coach, who is, like I said, like I've studied upon, a type beat rapper from Koreatown, Los Angeles. Is that correct? Type beat?
Yes.
So what is a type beat rapper, to anyone who asks?
So it's like people who just kind of start off on music and they just go on YouTube to find, you know, they just find their own style through other people's beats. And it's not necessarily someone who could produce, but someone who has ideas, who could just lay it out there for free also.
So how'd you get your start doing that in the first place and beginning this whole journey?
I had a friend that just posted on SoundCloud, and I didn't know that you could just post on SoundCloud like that for free. And I didn't know there were that many beats on YouTube too. Cause like a couple years back, it would just be like only the beats that have like a millions of plays, and they're just like everyone used them. But now they're like all these producers that are just dropping beats for free. So I just hopped on. It's the only option.
Yeah. So back in the day, when producers were still just dropping beats, a lot of the times it was non-royalty free, where you would have to ask them their licensing agency to use that beat. Do you still do that in a way, with even though it says royalty free, like, do you still do that? Because you are putting out commercial content that I'm sure is licensed.
Yeah, I mean, I pay the producers. Okay. Yeah. It's like, if it's a song that's going to do good, I buy the whole beat. And then if it's something like, just like that's part of my EP or something, I'll pay like $25 for a lease and stuff like that.
Right.
But like the songs that I know have more viral power, I'll buy the whole beat.
And all of this is done in Koreatown, or is it just done? Is it done anywhere else?
Yeah, it's done in my room. It's in my attic.
Awesome. So what is life like in Koreatown, Los Angeles?
It's calm, pretty spoiled. Because I live with my mom. Yeah, but I'm trying to move out and all that. I'm trying to make money, do my own things.
Yeah.
But like I'm pretty blessed with my situation here. So I can't complain.
Why are you blessed?
Because currently I'm helping my mom out. I help her work three times a week and stuff like that. And I'm living in a room, so there's no attic. I mean, there's no rent. So it's just like no rent in LA. It's always good, especially as like a profession that should be in LA, should be based in LA, or at least.
LA is like one of those like crazy, like it's like an amazing and awesome place overall, like from an outside view. But like once you start living there and you realize how much like everything costs as far as like rent goes and property and value and real estate, it's like, how do I like even afford to live in a way? You know what I mean?
Yeah, you got a room with like four or five people.
Yeah.
And just split your rent. Fuck that. I'm not trying to do that.
I have a buddy whose grandparents live in LA, and when they bought their house initially, they bought it for like a really cheap price. But this was like way back in like the 60s. And then like now it's like a little small suburban house that's worth like over $1 million just because of like location and everything. So yeah, even like when you're living with like four or five people, do you still feel like it's as expensive, or do you feel like the cost kind of like mediate down?
I mean, I was born and raised in the same room for like 23 years. So like, I mean, I went to college for like 4 years, but besides that, I've been staying in this room. So I don't really know. I can't really relate to those who like struggle with rent in LA, but yeah.
Gotcha. So you have more like an outside view then?
Outside view for the outside people that are trying to come to LA.
I mean, well, do you have friends that pay a lot of rent too, or is it just, are they all kind of like in the same boat as you for the most part?
Yeah, all my friends are neighborhood friends. So we're either kicking at their parents' house or something, or smoking weed in the car. Hold on, let me get a charger real quick.
Yeah, no, you're fine.
All right, we back.
Cool. I was going to say as well, going to college, UC Davis, that's where you went, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
That's where I went.
UC Davis, what did you study?
Managerial economics.
Really?
Yeah. That's business. I'm a cool word for business.
Oh, cool. So at UC Davis, which is fairly well known, and I've known, like, seeing through Reddit, there's a lot of, like, posts there. So I'm just going to go through Reddit and find these posts and see how many you can actually relate to.
All right.
Because, like, I go down here in Atlanta, I go to Georgia State University, and there's some posts on Reddit that I can't relate to, some I can. But what do you think is, like, the most popular, like, going to UC Davis, like, the most popular, like, folklore or just popular, like, event going on down there among students that they always talk about?
Well, like, everything was, like, way cooler as a freshman, so I'll probably, like, I'll speak through, like, my eyes as a freshman. But, like, mm-hmm. back then, picnics, like, that was, like, always on, like, 419 or 421.
And those 421? Would be, like,
yeah, it would just be, like, kind of, like, a crazy party day where you could just, like, get fucked up in the morning and stuff like that, starting at, like, 7 a.m. And, like, people, like, talk about stories about how crazy they are. I think it's pretty fun.
And when did you graduate? When did you graduate?
Like, last summer. Last July. Or June, July, whatever. Yeah.
Okay, because I'm on Reddit right now.
Are you still enrolled in college?
I am. I'm out. This year in May. But I'm in Georgia State University, which is it's the largest, I think, one of the largest public universities in Georgia, with like 33,000 students. So it's pretty big.
It's in Atlanta?
Yeah, Atlanta.
I have a couple of music friends I could link you to also if you're down later on after this. They're based in Atlanta too, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Wait, what are their names?
On Paper Bag. But like Mike Meraki, Han Vader, Nick Alexander, and there's like a couple of people in the band. Yeah.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, definitely tell me afterwards.
Yeah, I'll link you that afterwards.
Okay. I found this one thing on Reddit that applies to UC Davis. Are you familiar with a person named Gary Esme?
No.
Okay.
Gary Esme.
This was posted 2 months ago, so I wasn't sure if like it was still relevant to you, but basically there's a lot of posts like making fun of like one person on Reddit who's a big head at UC Davis. Yeah, have you ever? Yeah, a lot of these posts are just like people like archives, nostalgia, which is really weird. Do you ever feel like is UC Davis one of those schools where like everyone is kind of a community pretty much, or is it like so big that you kind of have to find your own friends in a way?
Yeah, Davis is definitely like a unique college experience, like because like you go on campus and like you even go outside of campus and there'll be like no kids or no parents. It's all students.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, like only on the weekends you'll see them, but like it's a rare commodity that you see like kids and parents. And like also a lot of the times there's really nothing to do in Davis, so you kind of have to find your own clique. Gotta find your own like. Find your own group and community. And like that's honestly how I became like a rapper or a musician, because I just had to do something to make, like, entertain myself.
Did you get like inspired from the people you met around you to pursue it? Or was it always like a predestined thing that you wanted to do before you went to Davis?
No, I just thought that I could do better, and I thought like I could do something with that. And also like I saw shows in Davis, and that was like, and like I was able to throw shows because I had my own house in Davis, so that was tight. So that's like also part of the reason why I started.
So you basically had your own house in Davis and threw your own house shows where like people come, you're saying?
Yeah.
That was pretty tight.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. I used to grab.
Was it like, did it get to a point like where you would have to like stop it in a way because it would get too crazy, or did you just like love that ride?
Yeah, we just let it ride till like 4 a.m. and shit. Like no cops came. Wow. There was like taco truck standing. Like there was like a taco tricycle like serving tacos outside our house. And she was crazy.
That is.
Yeah, like our doors were all broken and shit. Like the walls were all stained with like blue denim because everyone was just grinding on like some ho- like some bitch or whatever. It's just like, it was funny.
Do you take a lot of that for your songs, whether it's Stutter or among many others that are, have like a hard type beat or a slow type beat? Do you take a lot of that inspiration from those house parties, or where's the primary inspiration actually come from?
Yeah, I mean, I try to make music that would sound good on the stage in front of tons of people, you know, just kind of just kind of visualize like, oh, that would be cool if I, like, the harder the drop, the harder the participation,
right?
Essentially, right? So I just try to emulate that, you know.
So when you're, I know. I feel like it's the same way when you're listening to any rapper and you're not like, and you're listening to the words and understanding it too, but you're mainly paying attention to the beat as well. Like, especially like at a live concert venue too, like you see that visually as well.
Yeah, exactly.
So I've been looking through your Instagram page and you do have both this musician side where you are a musician and you are making music and you are putting it out to people, but then there is also this comedic sighting to you as well, whether it's your style, the clothes you wear. Is there like a influence as far as that, or is there a reason like why you decided to like go that route and show yourself off that way?
Well, like that my Instagram page started off as like John PVRK, like it was my actual Instagram page, and then like I just turned that into a Finsta. Like, it's my real Finsta. Like, I don't hide anything.
Really? So you're like, pretty much an open book then.
Yeah, I mean, I have second accounts and all that, but like they have like two posts on them, and I don't really call it. I just call it like Swim Cooch or whatever. But I use the main account, and that's just like I don't hide anything.
a lot of it is just like promotion of your material too, and I feel like it's pretty good with the size of the followers you have. I feel like also too, like if a fan gets to know an artist this way, it makes them really connectable too, like, and relatable.
Yeah, like, I started like a Discord chat, and like that just like helps us connect with your fans and stuff like that, and it's just like a chat where you could like talk with your friends. And like, they don't become fans, they just like, they become friends essentially. And it's like, it like closens that barrier of like, you know how like a lot of fans give too much power to their like to the artists, but like we're all the same people essentially. And you could really feel that once you like start actually like communicating them, like with them, not just like off like a DM basis, but like, oh, good morning fans, how you doing type shit.
I feel like that's the same way with Andre 3000 in a way, because like I'm from Atlanta, so like I understand like how like big like Outkast 100,000 is, because it's like one of the unspoken things. It's like, if you want to make it as a rapper in Atlanta, like you have to like respect Outkast and everything they've done, because they've pretty much cultivated the culture. But like back when Andre 3000 would start living in Atlanta before he moved to New York, he would be at shows in like the smallest towns, like literally like house parties, like you would pull. If you did one of those in Atlanta, like Andre might pull up. And shit, he's just like one of those people who'd like talk to anyone, like ask how their day is going. But it's like, do you have any idea like how, like there, without you, there'd be like none of this happening. So it's really crazy. I think it's really important for like artists to like kind of understand like where they come from and just be a normal person to fans in a way.
Yeah.
So taking a deeper dive into your music, when you are buying these beats, when you are paying producers or having them even make beats for you, is there a certain process of doing that? Do you actually write out the lyrics first, or do you want to listen to the beat and then you get inspired off of that on what to create?
Yeah, I mean, the payments always come last. So I have a finished product, and then I have it, sounds good with me, with my friends. And then like, as soon as I'm about to post it, I'll just pay the producer. But like, usually when I get the beat, I'll just do some gibberish flow, like blah, 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 you know, just like to see how the beat rides. Sometimes I could freestyle, and then most of the times I'm plugging in words, just like an equation, just like plugging in words that fit like that kind of like tone or whatever. Yeah.
How long does it usually take you?
Like I wrote No Cuff in like three hours, but there are songs that take days. It's usually the quicker tracks that do better because it's more natural, it's more emotional, it's more smoother.
I definitely hear that a lot off the Swim Bot because you have like those really heartbeat songs like I was saying, but then you have a lot of other songs off of Swim Bot that are just like those slow, not so hard in your face tracks. Were those are those great examples of like things that take a couple of days, or were there a couple that took like 3 hours, like No Cuff?
Yeah, Stutter was like really quick. Like the that part, that was the mm-hmm. first take. That was the first take, and I was like,
oof. Really?
Yeah, like that was when
this
I was
really good for a first take.
I was just doing gibberish to see how it sounded, and I did, and I was like, oh, I'm keeping that shit. So I that was quick. Cambridge was really quick. Yoda was kind of long, and like for the other soft song, there was one soft song I left it in the shelf for like 5 months, and then I came back to it, and I didn't change it at all, and I just dropped it. Which was like the last song, Give You More, but one of my favorite songs to make love to.
So are you one of those people that listens to their own music?
Yeah.
In a way? How's that make what's that like when you listen to yourself after you make something, or like months or a year after you make something?
It's pretty rewarding, you know? It's like your own kid. Like, and then like you make other songs that are based off like the themes of the kids that you made, kind of. And like you make brothers for your kids, essentially. You make siblings for your kids. You know, like have a family of songs.
It's just like a whole like nuclear like song family living under one roof, pretty much.
Yeah, it's like you can't really, and also like keeps me in lane with like my music subjects because I don't want to like branch out too far because I already have a lot of styles going on, you know. So like I like to stay in those three lanes.
Do you ever just listen like, to your music and like think back to it thinking like, oh, like I shouldn't have done that, maybe I should have added a beat there, or is it just like I like it or love the way it is?
Yeah, I mean there's a lot of times where I'm like, oh fuck, I should have like moved it like a half an inch to like have mm-hmm. it hit at that perfect time, but like people don't recognize that, like people don't realize that unless it's too obvious. So I just learned to like just accept it and just send it because people are going to enjoy the rest of the song regardless.
It's subjective too. I mean, I think a lot of people don't understand that like when you go into the music industry, no matter if you're like a manager, a producer, an artist, or any like part of it, not everyone's going to like your work, and that's okay.
Yeah. So I just learned to like just love what I do. I mean, like love my product and just like send it when I feel like it's ready. Because if I just keep like trying to microanalyze it, it'll never get done, you know.
And it's never going to get sent out anyway, so.
Yeah.
And it'll just take longer and longer and longer.
Yeah.
With those house parties, going back to it.
Yes.
Was there, like, a moment you realized, like, you could do this and, like, send out all the stuff out and make it a career? Like, at those house parties, or was it, like, after it or before? Because I could just imagine, like taco stands and like people coming in and like all this happening, it's like this could be something.
So like during that time, like that I can't call it an era, but like in that moment, like that was when like everyone, the, you know, the hey, like that was really in where everyone was trying to hype everyone up in the room. Song doesn't have to be good, you just got to get everyone to say hey like simultaneously. So mm-hmm. like I try to pretty much just, you know, I try to host that, and it worked. All right, make better music to get to like keep itching that feeling, pretty much.
When you go to live shows now or in the past, like, do you ever get inspired from the crowd reaction, thinking like, oh, I could do this in the future if I put my heart to it? Does that give you a drive, or is it more just like actually listening to music?
Back then it was like, oh, so motivational. I'm like, wow, I wish I could do this, but like I kind of got a taste what that feels like. So like now I'm like, it's more relatable, but still a far distance, like it's still very mm-hmm. far away from me, from like, but it's still like I don't know where I'm going with this. So
like, can you read? Are you trying to say like you've seen other live shows where that happens and it's a bigger audience, but then you do it and then you can relate to it, but it's not like at that reach yet. Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah. So like, ooh, in terms of resources and funding, like I'm very far from that, but like in terms of performance and talent, I feel like I'm around there. I'm like around that league, you know, mm-hmm. and I feel like I could emulate the same type of response that artists put out if I had the same funding and like stage. If I had like fat speakers, fat crowd, fat visuals, the music will come through, you know?
It will. Do you, what inspirations do you take as a part for your musical venture as part of a live show goes, still going on that?
Man, I'm an internet kid, you know, I spent my whole life on internet. So like anything I do will be like based off shit I used to do as a kid or like, so like inspirations.
Yeah, like musical inspirations, like influences, inspirations? Artists, beats, like life, anything that like was been encapsulated within your life and has now been put into your art.
Yeah, I mean, I really like the early SoundCloud days. I like the generation of like I Love Makonnen, Father, OG Mako. Like, you know, those weird, they all have like their own weird shit going on. Like,
I've actually met Father.
Yeah.
At the station. He, like, what was funny too, it was really funny because I still do it, but at the radio station I work for, we used to have this thing called 88 Sessions, which is like a live concert recording series where we get local artists from the Atlanta area. They come on and perform. And one of our artists was Ethereal, who's a rapper on Awful Records. And that's Father's label as well. And there's a song that he does that features Father. And I was just talking to this one guy who worked at the station, just chatting up. All of a sudden, this guy like walks in with like yellow blonde dreads, like Tootsie Roll dreads. And he's just like, hey, what's up, man? What's up? What's up? I'm like, hey, how's it going? And we talked for a little bit. And I forget what the conversation was. But then I just see him like, he was sitting in the crowd. He goes up on stage as Ethereal is performing, just does his part and goes to sit back down. And all of us on crew were just like, who the hell was that?
Damn.
And then like we looked him up on Instagram, like, oh, like shit. And like we found out like he's really influential to our scene. So it's funny you said that.
Yeah, like they all have like, I kind of see them as like internet rappers, you know? It's mm-hmm. just like, they just like, just kind of seems like they live there and they're like, they dominate that space.
Yeah. Well, a lot of the times too, like, I think that's a new wave of like how you're going to get big now as a rapper is through the internet, through Spotify, through SoundCloud, and all these platforms that enable an artist as well.
Yeah.
Do you have any influences that aren't on the internet, or is it all internet based? As you said, you were an internet kid.
No, I mean, well, definitely like from where I'm, like my environment also influences me, but I don't try to push that in terms of like me being Asian and stuff like that. Like I don't really speak Korean in my raps, you know. I'm more of like an American Korean than a Korean American. Mm-hmm. So I feel like there's like a small demographic that could relate to me in that way. Cause all my friends are like me, because we're like more American than we are Korean. So like, because I know there's like a lot of artists who just like rap about soju and shit like that. Well, and they can, because like that's like their culture, but that's not my culture. So I'm trying to like represent those kids through my lyrics, and I'll like write my lyrics in that form or in that attitude.
Because Koreatown is a big Latinx, Asian American like community where it all kind of like flushes in to one another.
Yeah, it's like 50-50 essentially.
Mm-hmm. So with all, do you ever, so right now I do understand that a lot of the lyrics are hype and hard hitting, and then like your soft songs are more about themes of like love and tenderness and stuff like that. Do you think with the culture that you're raised around that you want to write songs that are more about specifically Koreatown, Los Angeles, or any of the actual ethnicities that do live there in the future?
Yeah, I mean, I'll definitely probably like write about those things, but it wouldn't be in like a whole song because then it would just be too much. I like to like sprinkle in like little spritz of my life into like a once like one line, and then like have people piece it, like people who really like listen to my lyrics, they could like piece like kind of where I'm from. But like I wouldn't give them one track describing everything.
You want to give them like a full concept pretty much so they can like understand the realm of it.
Yeah.
Within the realm of Koreatown, what are your favorite things to do there? Just like a day in the life of swim coach in Koreatown, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Well, me and my friends don't really like to go out and party. So 90% of the time, we're probably smoking in my backyard, in my car. We go to like a couple restaurants. We have like a couple preset restaurants that we always go to. Sells ribs and stuff like that. Pretty good.
Which is the best one if you have to say like on the spot?
Man, I can't give that location away because then that'll be packed and I'm going to have to wait in line at my own restaurant. That's going to suck.
Dang. I mean, I know like with Koreatown, there is that whole influence of 50-50 Latinx, 50-50 Asian, Asian American. So I know there's like a lot of K-pop stores, there's a lot of coffee houses, there's a lot of like rare places, Korean barbecue. But like it's all over the place too. Does it ever, have you ever visited places like that outside of Koreatown?
Like weird food and stuff like that?
I mean, not weird food, but like things that are like essential to Koreatown, like cultural to Koreatown that you saw outside.
I mean, I saw a Koreatown in New York. There is a K-Town in New York. I'm sure there are a lot of other K-Towns here.
Probably.
I mean, around America. But K-Town in New York looks more like Korea than the K-Town in L.A. It's like the buildings and stuff like that, the way like the signs are put up and stuff. Yeah.
That's just so weird to me in a way, because like with like Koreatown, Chinatown, like CBGB, which is like a famous like rock club back in the day, I feel it's almost like commercialism and like you're trying to make something that can profit out of it when it's like, this is like literally a town where people live, like where people have lives and jobs. It's in a way, I don't know. Cause I've always felt like I love little towns like that. And I know Koreatown's not like a little town, but like, yeah. I've always liked cultural things that like stay humble to like where they come from. Because I feel like if it gets expanded, like you said, like those long lines anywhere else, it just ruins the whole vibe of it.
Yeah. I mean, there are like, recently there's been a lot of like new stuff coming in and shit like that. So like everything's getting expensive in K-Town as well. Like, and they know that they could get away with it because K-Town's like a pretty viral spot now, you know? It's like, so everything's going up to like $10, $15, man. Everything used to be like $6 and shit.
Oh my God. That's Los Angeles for you.
Yeah.
So this is not going to really be related to anything that we just talked about now, but tell me about your cat.
Oh, fuck yeah. My
cat's You're like waiting for me to like ask that.
Yeah. I didn't find him, but like one day sophomore year in college, I was like, dude, I just want a cat. Because it seemed like they were really easy to take care of and stuff. So I just put on Facebook, I want a cat right now. And then someone introduced me to Gatsby. And then when I walked up to Gatsby, he rubbed his body on me, like on the first time I met him. And then that's all it took for me to be like,
that's what cats do.
And I wasn't ready for this. I didn't have cat litter. I didn't have food. I didn't have anything. So I just had this cat in my cage in my car. And I was like, I'm gonna go to Petco. I'm gonna buy all my stuff, my necessities. And then from there, it was just building a relationship. Now he's my best friend.
That's dope. It's crazy, though, like how much stuff you have to buy for like one pet. Because I remember when I was little, I was like, oh, I want a dog. All I have to do is like buy it food and water, and that's it. It's like, it gets more complicated.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they can get sick, too. And you have to take it to a vet, and you have to get insurance. Like, you don't have to if you don't want to, but like you have to get insurance and all that.
Yeah, it's also harder for cats to tell if they're injured or like,
really,
apparently they like to keep it to themselves and stuff like that. Yeah, so like you wouldn't really know until he's really hurting and like he can't hold back anymore, which always ends up in being like a higher a medical cost because it just got worse. But it's all chill, trying to get rich so I could feed him good stuff. No more dry food.
Get like the Pedigree like detail brand stuff.
Hell yeah. That's the goal.
I don't know. Like, I mean, I have a dog. I've never had a cat, but and my dog is sick. Like, I know my dog is sick because he'll like just like tilt his head down and just not move. Like, your cat just still be like walking around like normal, and you'll never know.
Yeah, he'll act. He'll like play it off.
Has there ever been like signs of that you knew, but like knew late in the game, or just like knew straight off the bat?
Yeah, I fed him like some shitty Costco food because it was like $15 for like 15 pounds. And I was like, damn, that's a pretty good deal. So I bought that and he got a UTI from that.
Are you serious?
Yeah. And like he would like be, because like pretty much the Costco food, there's like grains in it, like collects in his pee hole and it like it's forever. All that science.
Oh my God.
He just couldn't pee. So like he'll be like, it would get to the point where like he'd be trying to use the bathroom like every 30 minutes trying to let it out. And it was like, it was getting obvious at that point that he was like something going on. So I took his ass to the vet.
And now you found out what happened.
Yeah. They're like, he has a UTI and then they had to like stick a tube up his pee.
Oh my God. Stuff like that. It always freaks me out whenever flush I hear stuff like that. Even with like humans too, it's just like, I hate it.
Yeah.
So with your cat, has it like taught you like, it's going to be sound kind of weird, but has it like taught you like to be like more responsible in a way as you make music and be like more like on the go? Because like a cat's a lot of responsibility, or like a pet in general, and then that could drive you to other places.
Yeah, but I feel like Gatsby loves me. He loves me, but he doesn't care about me. So I don't really feel too bad when I'm like out and about doing stuff. So like every time I come back, he's just like, oh, you came back. You know,
you're here. Nothing
like, yeah, it's not a greet or anything. So I give him the same love back. You know, I take care of him. He's healthy. That's all that matters.
Do you ever want more pets, or is that like that going to be it?
I'd be down for more cats, but I don't know. I'd be down for a dog too. I'm down for a greyhound. I've been talking about this yesterday, actually. I'd be down for a greyhound that like color coordinates with my cat. Like have a gray dog. That'd be dope. Gray dog, great white paws. Be sick.
That'd be a great album cover too.
Oh yeah, that would be.
Yeah. So if you get inspiration, quote me.
Yeah, I definitely started wearing more gray and neon because of Gatsby. Like, straight facts.
So with clothing, you have your own clothing apparel now.
Yeah, it's actually my friend Matthew. He's Swim Pool Public. He's the one that like in charge of all the designs and stuff like that.
So was the fentanyl one your idea or his?
No, they're his. So basically anything that has like swim coach or swim on it will be labeled under my merch, but like kind of like more like different designs, like the ones we've been posting will be like towards his stuff, which we're still in the same like company/team. So like it's the same boat essentially, but just different profits, you know?
Understand. So where's the idea come from for the fentanyl shirt? The fentanyl kills rappers.
We just wanted something like kind of controversial and like kind of touchy, because you know, like why not talk about those things?
I mean, it's true too. Like,
yeah,
if you search fentanyl, just like Google it, and I did it, so I can tell you what it says. But fentanyl. By searching it, I'll give you like the whole Google spiel of like it's a common brand, it's this, the first thing it says narcotic, it can treat severe pain. Mm-hmm. Then it says controlled substance, high risk for addiction and dependence. And it just literally like will give you the, before it even tells you like what it does like beneficially for you, which is ironic because a lot of it isn't beneficial for you. It'll tell you like everything is bad for you about it.
Yeah. And it's just, I looked it up too. And it's the first thing it says is it could kill you.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure the results are just like, like the first thing that you, one of the first things you see is like fentanyl DEA fact sheets, fentanyl drug overdose. Like even in news, it's just like all these things happening with fentanyl. So it's controversial, but it does speak in high volumes, like what's going on in America and the world.
Yeah, and you don't even know what fentanyl is. Like, people don't even know, like, what's in fentanyl, like, what's snuck in with the fentanyl, you know what I'm saying? Like, it could be, like, coke, heroin, like, a lot of things. It's not just one drug, so people got to be careful, especially in the LA scene, man.
Is like, fentanyl the biggest, like, killer there?
I don't know about that, but, like, let's talk about in, like, Mac Miller's case, right? Like, this guy is, like, he's like a high profiting artist. It's like you would expect for him to get some high quality coke, you know? Like, how would he? So like even like someone who has like, let's say like his plug or whatever, I don't know. Like you'd expect him, like a higher artist, to get higher quality products essentially, right? So like even that could sneak up to those ranks of Mac Miller, you know? So just telling everyone to be careful.
And it's just like one of those things, like things. Because even if you have like you are a high profiting artist, I'm sure you don't just have like one specific plug. I'm sure there's like multiple plugs too, and then that like fentanyl or whatever, or like whatever bad substance may be, like, well, I'd say bad substance and light, but whatever like bad substance or killer substance would be, it could easily get in there somehow.
Yeah,
but that was a shitty day though when he died.
Yeah, that was unexpected.
I know. I was like really taken aback too, because I was like, because I know he just broke up, and then literally like think like a month, I don't think when was that, like I guess like a month or two later it just happened like unexpectedly.
Yeah, also sucks that you gotta get your, like everyone gets their news off Instagram now. Like I'm like scrolling, enjoying my free time, you know,
Miller's yes
dead, and I'm like, wow, just ruined my free time, bro.
I know. Like I was at work when that happened, and one of our coworkers just said, Mac Miller just overdosed. I'm like, oh, okay, he's gonna be okay. And then like literally like right after I thought that, she just said he died. I'm like, oh, well, shit.
Yeah.
Like, and then like we were all talking about it in like the office, and then we had a client like outside, and he was like a young kid too, and like I knew like he listened to Mac Miller or like some form of like rap or something like within that realm, and he had no idea. So he was just saying, he told me, he's like, hey, what are y'all talking about? Like, sounds important. And so I have to be the person to like tell him that Mac Miller died. And I was like, yeah, it's almost like I know now like from that one moment I understand like why it's so tough for people to tell them like others, like their friend died or their family member died. Like I understand, like almost understand like what it's like being that person. But yeah, that was a tough day.
Yeah.
Do you, in the same thing, with, XXXTentacion as well? Well, I mean, he was shot though, so it's a little different, but still.
Yeah, that was weird. I got that news out of nowhere too. Yeah.
How do you feel about him?
He's definitely made some bad bangers, you know.
Yeah.
I don't really like dive too deep into what other people. I'm not a very opinionated in terms of like those subjects. I just kind of leave it alone. Because I feel like minds have already been made up about this person. You know, like my opinion. Mm-hmm. It's not gonna shift anything, so
right.
I just like his music. Keep it at that.
Fair enough. Yeah, I felt the same way. Apart from what I think of him, I felt like he definitely had like a lot of talent, like for what he was doing. Even though I just didn't like, I think it was like an EP called Revenge he did.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't the biggest fan of that, but then I like later like tracks like Jocelyn Flores and But yeah, no, he's definitely was a talented artist. But yeah, it's just so weird now, like, because I think your shirt does speak volumes in that way, that like Fenatool and like all these things do kill rappers, which is very like interesting, because you think of like what kills the most rappers, it's like Fenatool, codeine, and like all these like different types of drugs that you could literally buy off like a store, buy off a shelf in Walgreens. And then you have like the flip side where it's like what kills like a lot of rock musicians, like heroin, like weapons, cocaine, stuff like that.
Yeah.
With your shirts as well, and I've been on the website too, and it's a really like well put together website that does sell like the product well. Swimteamstudios.com.
Yes.
What was the origin of, is it still Matthew that was like organizing the whole website, or was there someone else behind that, or were you behind that?
So pretty much swim comes from like arms, as you know, like when it's like, it stands for someone who isn't me, is for those who like, when you're talking in a forum regarding drugs, you don't want to incriminate yourself. So like swim is, so we're like, hey, we should be the swim team. And then swim team, I was like, maybe I'll be the swim coach. And then it just kind of grew into like, it was first.
And that's that's really creative, actually.
And then our definition of swim is someone who isn't me. It's like for like a kid like me, be a famous, like I want to be like, right? And like the only way I could do that is to act my ego, kind of. That's not generally me, you know, like that's not me to my parents or to like my friends.
And it's kind of hard.
Yeah, but
yeah,
like in essence, that still is you. It's just someone who wants to be you. So like, you gotta act like someone who you aren't. You gotta be uncomfortable to eventually be who you are, which is like the motto, the idea we're selling.
It's kind of like the Slim Shady model in a way, with Eminem.
Different personas.
Yeah, because when he first came out as Slim Shady, he was just like, I will do all these awful things to you. I will make fun of you. I will stomp on you. I will like destroy you, but be comical about it. And like, that's his Slim Shady model. And then you had people like in the early 2000s, like kids like who dyed their hair like blonde and like dressed like him. And then now it's like you look at him and he's like, I guess he still has it in a way, but it's very like calm and reserved. But it's more like, I am like Marshall Mathers. I am like a 40-something-year-old man, and I'm much more reserved.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like the Slim Shady, like he is in his music, is not like the Slim Shady, like that person he is in real life, like his kids or anything like that. That is a good analogy in a way.
Yeah.
So it's like the exact same thing that I'm getting from you. Talking about you have this ego within the website and the artistry, but it's more like you're not exactly like that to your parents.
Yeah.
But I'm looking around on the website too, and as of now, you have an actual like biography for it too, for Fenatool.
Let me go on.
Yeah, it's on the archive, and it's, you click on Fentanyl Kills Rappers, and it's a bottle of fentanyl. It says kills rappers, the bio, and then also the picture morning bacon with her. That picture twice on Instagram. First one was just you doing it, and the second one was you doing it again, but saying it's baking soda. Please don't arrest me. I'm curious to ask and know, did people like actually think that was like cocaine and were just DMing you like, is that cocaine?
No, I just got to put it out there in case, you know?
Yeah.
But
I was just curious because there were two photos, that's why. Or was that like,
I mean, because a lot of my rap lyrics, I definitely talk about, you know, I definitely talk about it as more of like a party thing. So it wouldn't be surprising if someone assumed that was real, you know?
Yeah, because like I remember I first saw it, and like I thought like this is not real. And then like immediately, it's funny because I immediately saw the other post afterwards that was baking soda. So it works. Like you said, you got to put it out there.
Yeah. I mean, also like I'm getting like now I'm picking up on viewers too. So I got to be careful with what I say or like mm-hmm. do. You know? I have a like I'm like slowly building a platform, and I'd like to steer my audience in a proper way, you know.
Yeah, because I'm the same way, like trying to build my platform, because I can't, like, there are things I would have said like a long time ago in the past I would not say like now, like at this very moment, because like literally everything you do is like seen by everyone online.
Yeah,
no matter if you're like you're big or small too, because like people can like, it's like an archive. Like people can go back way back in time and just find everything you're doing.
Yeah, internet is forever.
It is. Especially like things like that are coming out now about people. Like they can like, not even like in the dark web, just like things that you can go back into like a Twitter sphere or like a Facebook sphere or an Instagram sphere and just find everything. And it just ruins people. Ruins people.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah.
I think Facebook's the most dangerous one.
Why do you say that?
Instagram.
Why is Facebook the most dangerous?
Because, like, that was, like, one of the earliest forms of social media. So, like, people, like, middle school would have, like, old-ass photos of them, like, tagged photos that, like, they're too bothered. Like, they don't bother deleting them because there's just so many. Just, like, years of, you know, memories. But, like, Instagram, you could just purge them. Or like delete your whole account, but like I feel like Facebook is different. It's like with Facebook, there's definitely more real friends than Instagram.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, the thing with Facebook too is that like you save the tagged photos, and you could like you could have that person set that photo to private, but I think if you can search someone's name like in the search bar, it will still show that photo because you were at one point in time linked to that photo.
Yeah.
So like I can see what you're saying with on Facebook. I just feel like now with I'm just thinking Twitter too, because every single controversy that's happened has been like with Twitter as well. As far as like Kevin Hart and the Oscars and what was his name? One of the director for Guardians of the Galaxy. He's not in it anymore because of all these like pedophilic comments he was making on Twitter. And Disney was just like, nope, we're not having you. So it's just really dangerous in that way. With your artistry again, going back to it, has there ever been a point in your artistry? Because I know you are building yourself a fan base, but before you were building yourself a platform, but before that platform did take off, did you feel ever at a point you were just like, I can't do this anymore, and you're like close to like giving it out?
Man, it's a cool question because I actually didn't feel I never felt that when I didn't get views, because at that point it was just strictly a hobby, you know, I was doing it for fun. So like there was no money involved. There was no expectations involved. No fans to like make proud, you know? So I didn't really care. I just dropped shit. But now it's like, oh, I'm dropping something and people are like, I'm fucking ready.
Accolades, yeah. But you've also went on to selling your merch too at like literally in public spaces.
Oh yeah.
How'd that go?
That was cool. I mean, no one really bought them because we accidentally overpriced them. But
oh really?
We do this thing where we open swap meets. We go to a swap meet like Saturday and Sunday. We don't do it anymore, but we will do it later. But we just sell like inventory and shit. And people buy them.
What made you how do you accidentally overprice it?
Well, it's just like all like, you know, like marketing tactics. We didn't want to like sell the shirts for too cheap, because then we were afraid that it would like hold some meaning behind why it's so cheap. So we would overprice them, and then people just don't want to buy overpriced things, you know. Unless it has some type of hype to it, but we don't have that power yet.
Yeah. That's just crazy, like how if you see merch like online and you're like, or like even like in a Target or something like that where it's like a big artist, it would be like, oh, $25 for the shirt, but then you're actually like at that like arena show and it's like $65 for like a sweater, or like 60 or like 40 for a shirt.
Yeah, like my mom works, so like we have a factory in downtown, and like I handle hoodies and t-shirts and all that, and like everyone's mostly using All Style, Gildan, Hanes, or like Fruit of the Loom t-shirts, you know, and these all cost like not even like $1 per shirt, and you're just putting paid on it. That's like, and you're like Kanye, for example, would be selling Gildan hoodies go for like $5, and he's selling them for 60, you know, and they sell out quick.
I was actually at his St. Pablo tour way back when, and the $65 like sweater, like that was his. And it was just like this, it's a nice shirt, but it's just like literally like
a long sleeve that said like,
yeah,
the long sleeve. Yeah, I had one.
Yeah,
too.
It's nice, but it's like general admission and like a little thing of saying St. Pablo, like right on the chest.
Did you get the hoodie or the long sleeve?
I got the long sleeve. Yeah, what'd you get?
Yeah, I got the long sleeve too.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's one color sleeve back in the front. How expensive can that be? For a Gildan long sleeve. So
it's just his thing. Cause like, he knows people like will buy that shirt from him. Like that's the thing with Kanye. Like it's in clothing. It's like, how does this guy like sell these shoes that cost like 800, like $1,000 a pair, have like clothes that are like $3,000. Like, I don't even know if he's spending, like, if people are like buying it that much to like what he says.
Yeah, it can be just like an image thing, but he's an icon. He has the power.
I mean, yeah, like, he does. So
he does have like the following for people to just be like, I'll buy anything you make.
This is crazy to me though, because one of my friends who's like the biggest Kanye fan on the planet, like he has like all the shirts, like the albums, the vinyls and everything like that.
Damn.
And he bought like actual like Yeezys, like Yeezys from like Adidas, like not like a Hypebeast like contest, no like black market,
yeah,
this or that, like full on Yeezys, and paid like full price for them, like in tax and everything. And I'm like, and I saw them in person too. I'm like, these are nice, but like I wouldn't pay that much money for them. But that's just the cult of his fans.
Yeah, he has his own monopoly going on.
I'm trying to think, like, how is it a I mean, like,
because he has no competitors. Kanye is Kanye.
That's true. But like, my thing is though, like, is that even though he has this whole monopoly going on, it's almost like that, because I don't think, like, if Jay-Z like had some shoe deal with, like, I don't know, like Nike or like Rock Aware or something like that, and like they did the same thing, it would be a competitor, but I still think Kanye would just take that market.
Yeah, exactly. He's more modern. He stays relevant. Like,
he is.
You notice, like, any tweet he posts will be on, like, Genius will pick a screenshot of that shit, and they'll be like, oh, look what Kanye said.
It's boom, so crazy right to me. Like,
that's like 100,000 likes right there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just crazy to me, like, how relevant Kanye has been. Because he's not even, like, he's obviously, like, not a new rapper. He's, like, at this point, like, an old rapper, like, from 2004. Like, up there with, like, not like DMX is a bit older, but like with The Game and like 50 Cent, like he's on, like he came out at the same time they did, and he's way more relevant now, like way more relevant.
It's because he changes with the community or with time.
Yeah. And like that's like the one thing like that The Game and 50 Cent happened. Well, I mean, I guess 50 Cent's still a bit relevant in ways, like, but he just doesn't make music much anymore. He's just been acting now.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of old rappers just start getting more interested in business.
They do. Even like with T.I. like in Atlanta, like, because like way back when he was like the biggest like rapper, like not even in Atlanta, but like in the world, I would argue. And then like now he's like, he still does music, like he still has Grand Hustle and everything.
Yeah.
But like, you never, no one is ever like hyped for a T.I. release as much as a Kanye release.
Yeah.
And even him is like, as a person, not Kanye, but like T.I. as a person, just like being in Atlanta, like he actually came into my job one time, because I'm a tour guide for the university, and he was literally, it's like T.I. with his son, like, walking around Atlanta for everyone to see him. And it's like, do you not realize, do you, like, realize, like, who you are? And, like, you're walking around, like, downtown Atlanta, which is, like, the most, which is, like, the busiest part of Atlanta, where you have a lot of people, mostly, like, people my age who grew up with T.I. because it's college.
Yeah.
And you're, like, on a tour with other people that are, like, close to my age, question mark.
Yeah.
Like, you could have, like, set this whole thing up VIP, but, like, that's just on him. Like, the thing with Kanye is that, like, if you have Kanye walking around an area, he'll get mobbed.
Oh, yeah.
With, like, T.I., it's, like, he might have, he'll have a fans come up to him, but he's not going to get mobbed.
Yeah, just a couple pictures, like, oh, shit, that's T.I.
Yeah, that was pretty much it. I mean, he still pulled it up in, like, an Escalade and everything. You have to be, like, privately escorted to, like, our information sessions and all that. But Kanye is just, like, he steps out the car. It's just, like, a flash mob, pretty much.
Yeah, that sounds like too much, man.
It is. I mean, my thing is, that was so weird to me, is that, like, I believe that he genuinely loves Kim Kardashian. Like, yeah. I believe that firmly, but, like, it's, like, you have one of the biggest rappers in the world, and you have the biggest social media, like, personality, TV personality in the world, like, getting married. It's, and then, you know, like, the paparazzi is going to be all over them, like, everywhere.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
No.
I don't even understand, like, how you could be that famous, too. Like, because the thing with T.I. is, like, he doesn't realize, like, how famous he is, which kind of helps him, but, like, Kanye has to be fully aware of how famous he is. Like, he has to be aware how big of a deal he is, which inflates his ego, but he'll make better music because of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Kanye, is he your favorite rapper, or is there still, like, typed rappers on the internet that you would say is, like, this is the one?
Like, my favorite rapper?
I don't know if I have a
rapper.
Like, who's, like, one then that, like, drives you and puts you in the musical spectrum that you're in right now?
Recently, I've been fanning over Kid Cudi. You know, his story is pretty cool. I just watched a video about, like, his come up and stuff like that. Pretty inspirational, you know.
Yeah, I mean, he's literally just a small town kid that, like, hit it big.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of rappers are like that, though, in a way. Like, the story with the story that makes me go, like, wow, is, like, Big Sean's story. If you heard his.
No, I haven't heard Big Sean's story.
You haven't heard it? So, it's pretty crazy. So, I think, yeah, he's from Detroit. So, he was in, like, he lived, back when he was in Detroit, he learned that Kanye, speaking of him again, was going to be interviewed at this radio station. And so, he went to the radio station, found Kanye there, and said, Kanye, can you please listen to my music? Can you please listen to my music? And Kanye said, okay, look, you have 10 minutes. Rap as much as you can, and I'll give you, and you can give it to me. So he just goes on this, like, 10-minute freestyle of everything, and Kanye is just like, okay. And then, like, after 10 minutes, he gives Kanye his music, and the rest was history.
Damn.
Yeah, like, could you imagine that, though? Like, what would you do, like, if you met Kanye, and he told you to rap for him for 10 minutes?
Nah, I would send him a track. I can't.
Imagine that? It was like, he wasn't expecting that either.
Yeah, I would have sent him a pre-recorded track that's been ready. It'd be filed. It'll be named for Kanye.
I know.
I can't speak to him.
Well, there's also that guy that used to work for some record company, and he was, like, cleaning out his house and just found all these old, like, demos that Kanye worked on that were never heard of before, and just uploaded them to the internet. And this happened, like, I think a couple of years ago, so Kanye was, like, still way big. But it's just crazy to think, like, how much, like, Kanye has done and all these people have done.
Yeah, I'm trying to, essentially, I'd be down to get to that level. I want to kind of have a big name in my own city where I could, like, essentially, the main goal is to own a warehouse and, like, have studios where, like, I could handpick my own talents, you know, and just, like, build my own empire that way. Because there's a lot of kids in LA that that are like stuck in their parents' home, or they don't have the equipment necessary to make, you know, it's all the ideas. It's just like all the technical equipment for making good hits, you know?
Yeah, no, I know Drake will actually, I think he actually will recruit rappers from Atlanta that are on the come up. So like people like I Love McConan, people like Gunna, like he'll see the talent in Atlanta and like recruit them on to his music. Do you ever like, so you want to get to that stage then where you're like recruiting people that you see in Koreatown or anywhere in Los Angeles?
Yes, anywhere in Los Angeles and just like somewhere where people could just kind of kick it at. Like it would be like a kind of oasis, like an oasis, yeah, where like kids who live in their parents still, kind of like my situation, like there's no place for these kids to hang out, you know? So why not just like, you could hang and be productive and meet, network at this place. It would just be like a very lenient, like kind of shindig get together where like I wouldn't really profit well, but I wouldn't care because I already be very wealthy off my music, hopefully
for the latter. But yeah, no, that sounds awesome. Just because that's how it almost is here. Even like with the Dungeon Family, which is, if you've never heard of it, it's basically this whole collective back in the day, and it had people like Goody Mob, Outkast, like CeeLo by himself, his solo career, and they all just like collectively met in this, like literally a basement they had to go into and make music.
Yeah.
And that's like what started their careers. So like what you're saying like speaks to high volumes of doing that in the future.
Yeah, I just need the funding.
Yeah. Well, hopefully you'll get it. And it's not even funding too, in a way, like you could literally network with people on social media and say, hey, let's all hang out this one time, let's network, let's chill, or like go to networking events.
Yeah,
it's all that. That's really awesome though. Like I definitely do hope that works for you in the future, but we are running out of time right now, so I do want to ask you one final thing. What is next for the musical life of Swim Coach?
More music, gonna be doing more shows in LA. If someone books me like out of state, I'm down to fly there and do stuff, because I've done that for New York. So do that. I'm down to do that. More music, just more music videos. I'm definitely gonna try to do something that has that, you know, viral potential, and just, you know, make noise.
All right, you heard it first. That is Swim Coach with everything he's doing here on With, Where, and Who. And this has been With, Where, and Who with Swim Coach. Thank you all for tuning in, and I will see you all later.
Thank you.
No problem. Yes.